broadcasting live from the Regis Business Center and office suites at Satellite Place in Duluth, it's time for Gwinnett Business Radio. Gwinnett Business Radio spotlights and highlights companies in Gwinnett County and the people who lead them.
And hello again, everybody, and welcome to Gwinnett Business Radio. I'm your host, Mike Salmon, alongside Stephen Julian. Hello, Stephen.
Hello, Mike. How are you this morning?
I'm doing really, really, really good.
Really?
Little congested.
Just a
up
little.
Up in the head area. So I've got the perfect guest today. We have a doctor in the room.
Well, and you are so professional that I don't even notice. But thank you for being open and honest and sharing that with me.
Yes. I won't be shaking your hand, though, but we'll have a good time.
Absolutely.
Some great guests in the studio today joining us for the show. From Hyperbaric Physicians of Georgia, we're joined by Charlie Hall and Dr. David Schwegman. And from Eva and Irma's house, it is Jill Kremens. A big thank you to all our guests for joining us today. We're going to start with David and Charles from Hyperbaric Physicians of Georgia. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Tell us, guys, about Hyperbaric Physicians of Georgia, your company and the services that you provide.
Well, our practice is a physicians group that's dedicated towards treating patients that have various wounds that are not healing properly. And that's, you know, it encompasses a broad spectrum of patients, though there's some groups that tend to kind of make up a large portion of the people that we see. One of those is diabetic patients who develop a small wound sometimes from a blister, for example, on their foot that ends up turning into a non-healing wound. From there, those patients are very much at risk for developing infections in their soft tissue, and from there it can get into the bone, which for those patients in particular can be very, very difficult to treat and can lead them to end up with either minor or even major amputations. And one of the challenges for that is among those high-risk patients like that, when they develop problems that leads to amputations, their risk of mortality is really increased by that. So we really work hard to help those types of patients get healed and stay, you know, on 2 feet wherever possible. Another large group of patients that we see and can and really change their quality of life for are folks that have had previous radiation injury through various cancer treatments, whether it's prostate cancer or pelvic cancers for the women, breast cancer patients, head and neck folks that can develop problems with their mandibles. All those patients, once they've had their therapy, even though nowadays it's very accurate and specific where they develop, where they're delivering the radiation, it's still very common for you to develop some challenges with the normal tissue just because you can't avoid at least some level of exposure to that normal tissue. So sometimes a year and a half, two after they've had their radiation, they'll start to have problems where they've gotten that radiation, whether it's bleeding from their bladder or rectum. The rectal tissue is actually quite susceptible to radiation damage. So for both men and women, they can have problems there. Ladies that have had breast cancer, now they're survivors, can find that the affected breast where they had radiation is very tender, very swollen. They can't pick up their child or wear a seatbelt without severe pain. All those patients have a great outcome if they can get to a practice like ours. And so our biggest challenge is really getting into the community so that the patients out there that are dealing with these issues know that there's a specialist here with specialized equipment, including our hyperbaric medicine therapy, that we're able to employ to get them to heal as they would be expected to. Many of these patients can end up with these injuries from their radiation or from a diabetic ulcer and actually be dealing with an open wound and an infection for months and even over a year. So if we can take that down to where they're back to their normal quality of life within a matter of weeks, obviously you're going to really change somebody's life at that point. So it's really exciting to be in this specialty, helping those patients out and getting them introduced to people like Dr. Schwegman here.
When a patient comes into your facility, what are they going to see? Take us through the process, because I've looked at the website and you see the hyperbaric, the chambers and the things that they get in. So they're being flushed with a lot of oxygen, and you're saying that medically that actually will help heal that wound faster.
Absolutely. I mean, just so that everyone knows, not everyone is a hyperbaric patient. So only about 10 to 15% of wound care patients end up being hyperbaric candidates. But for people that don't know what hyperbaric oxygen therapy is, it's basically using oxygen under pressure to help heal tissues. And so oxygen under pressure is actually a very, very potent drug. So I would think of it like antibiotics, think of it like chemotherapy. And basically, the oxygen is the drug, and the chamber is for lack of a better term, the syringe, that we can dial up the correct dose to give. And basically, there's a few physiologic effects that it has. So number one is hyperoxygenation of tissues. So in folks that have peripheral vascular disease, there's no blood flow getting to a part of your body. Same thing with diabetes. Same thing with radiation damage. Well, we can actually force oxygen into those tissues. And these tissues can't heal without oxygen. It's just a basis of life. You can't heal. But we make blood obsolete. We don't need blood anymore. We can actually force oxygen into those tissues without having blood vessels. What's great about that is that actually stimulates a response in your body in areas that don't have blood vessels to actually make new blood vessels. So these folks not only get the benefit of being able to heal by being in the chamber, they get a long-term benefit of actually regrowing small blood vessels in those areas so that when they're finished with their treatment, those effects are lasting and they can actually continue to heal themselves basically forever.
So this small subset of population that this is perfect for, is how much education goes into this? How new is this? And also, are you trying to reach the doctors with the information to refer to you, or are you trying to reach the patients themselves, or both?
I mean, that's a great question. And so let me take a step back and just talk about the education part. So hyperbaric medicine is not something that's taught in the core curriculum of medical schools. Although it's been around since the 1600s, it still isn't part of the core curriculum. My specialty is emergency medicine, and I spent almost a decade doing trauma at Emory. And when folks talk to me about hyperbaric medicine, other than treating carbon monoxide poisoning, it seemed a little ridiculous, because when someone tells a physician, yeah, I'm going to put this patient in a chamber and give them oxygen, which they're already breathing, and then an hour and a half later, they're going to go home and come back and do that for 2 months, and then all of a sudden things are going to be hunky-dory, it sounds a little preposterous, quite honestly, and I must admit that I was quite skeptical. However, now having practiced hyperbaric medicine for almost 5 years, I can tell you that for as many amazing things that I've seen and done in trauma and in the emergency department, I'm baffled sometimes at how amazingly effective this is. And so there is a great lack of knowledge out there in the community, both from a physician and from a patient standpoint. We know that people who are affected with illnesses that we can affect, we're probably reaching maybe 1% of them in Atlanta. So we know that there are so many people that are walking around Atlanta right now with a disease process that we can fix, that just simply don't have access because either A, they haven't heard of us, or B, their physician hasn't heard of us, or C, they've heard of us and their physician has poo-pooed it.
And I'm going to ask a little bit of a question of ignorance. It sounds like the main purpose in Charlie, in your first answer, is getting them back to a good standard of living. Is there also, and you talked about kind of building new blood vessels. So it's more than just, hey, you can feel better through this hard process you're going through with diabetes or radiation that you've gone through in the past. There are actual health benefits. Educate me.
What the problem is for the patient in the near term, if I'm a diabetic foot ulcer patient, that means that I'm probably going to a foot surgeon of some kind, whether it's orthopedist or podiatrist, and I've got to go there, you know, probably at least weekly, if not twice weekly, to be seen and have my wound cared for, because many of those surgeons are qualified to manage that kind of wound. There's special things you have to do when a wound doesn't behave as it would normally, left to its own devices. You're going to heal in a week to 2 weeks, depending on the size and depth. But it should move along. You know, you keep it clean, you keep it moist, not wet or dry. It's going to heal in most cases. But the challenge is that patient's got to have a gigantic boot on their foot. You've seen these people walking around with moon boots that look enormous, or they're having to couple that with a scooter that they ride around on to keep the weight off of that injury. Those types of things are very encumbering. Imagine if it's your right foot and you drive a car, you know, how challenging that would be. So just the logistics of dealing with the wound, seeing the physicians that they have to see to be, you know, getting better, to just the interference with their daily life. You got to put it on if you get up in the middle of the night. I mean, that's one of the toughest things for our patients. You've got a diabetic ulcer and you got to stay off of that wound. The patient gets up in the middle of the night and they walk to the bathroom without the boot. well, then they're re-injuring their foot and prolonging their healing time. So they, you know, like I say, it's just from a quality of life perspective, right now it's very encumbering and tiresome and interrupting. It really can drag them down a little bit. And it's a big impact on the patient's family or their support system because, hey, I need a ride to the physician. And if they're coming to us, I mean, it's a frequent trip. So, you know, that's one of the benefits. If, you know, as David talked about, the lasting effects in that diabetic patient or the radiation patient, once they've been through a course of hyperbaric medicine therapy, and now, as he's talked about, they've grown those capillaries into those hypoxic areas, the low oxygen areas, where they had the wound, and now we've brought that back up so that their body itself is able to support itself in that area. Now it can heal itself because, you know, basically there's a number, if you're measuring the level of oxygen in the tissue, if there's a number at which below that, it's probably not going to heal. We get them back so that their baseline body situation is now above that line, and now so that if they do get a little trauma or maybe a surgeon comes back to do a breast reconstruction in that field later, now they're able to heal as they would be more likely to be expected to down the road.
We're talking with Dr. David Schwegman and Charles Hall with Hyperbaric Physicians of Georgia. And Dr. Schwegman, you mentioned that hyperbaric medicine is not part of the core curriculum that doctors learn. Why is the medical world so against, if we have proof that it works? And I could hear your frustration in your answer earlier. If we know it works, why is the medical world so slow to accept this?
Well, I think for a few different reasons. One is that physicians in general we're a group of people that because we have lives in our hands, if we're going to do anything to a patient, we need to feel confident that it is going to help a patient. And so that's based on evidence. And so for a lot of medicine, it's very simple. There's lots of evidence-based medicine and trials that can be done on numerous things. The problem is with hyperbaric medicine is that our drug, which is oxygen, isn't created by Pfizer. There isn't anybody that's going to be able to fund research for this. And so basically a lot of our data has to come from us doing it and then publishing it after the fact. And in general, physicians don't consider that the highest level of evidence. However, we do know that we feel very similar to if somebody came to your office 30 years ago and said, you know, we have this thing that's going to change your business practice. It's called a fax machine. There are lots of people that went, well, that's silly. You know, and we feel the same way about hyperbaric medicine. Also, there are some bad folks in the community that are abusing hyperbaric medicine. So there are folks that are using inflatable bags that they're calling hyperbaric chambers, and they're advertising it that it has the same benefit as what we do. Our chambers are made from steel and acrylic. So our ability to drive oxygen into the cells is far greater than what they can do in these inflatable bags. So basically, these folks that are touting these, they're, I don't want to say stealing money from people and giving them false hope, but basically they're not able to generate enough pressure inside these chambers to actually do anything physiologically. We know that when you see a patient on TV that has an oxygen mask on, if you were to hook that up to an oxygen tank, you can actually deliver more oxygen via that mask than you can inside these inflatable bags. The problem is that these people are using this to their own financial benefit. And so out in the community, they see bad press of people that are misusing and abusing this technology. When it's applied appropriately, it is life-changing. And so our goal has always been that we practice the best evidence-based medicine. We are not doing this so that we can make a buck. We're actually doing this the right way. And we feel like if we just continue to do this the right way, that ultimately we will have a successful practice. But we won't do this for money. And the other thing that we don't do is if your insurance provider says, yeah, you're good for 40 hyperbaric treatments, but we know if there's things that we can do at the same time to get you healed more quickly, if it only takes us 20, we stop. And so that's also the difference between providers for hyperbaric medicine. Some folks will treat you as long as you're going to, someone will continue to pay that bill. And we don't do that.
You mentioned the people that maybe aren't using it the right way, and the bad apples out there that kind of spoil the whole bunch, if you will. Also, the perception of people being a little eccentric, like a Michael Jackson and so forth, and they sleep in the chambers and so forth. So you got that perception to go up against as well.
Well, you know, it's interesting you bring up Michael Jackson. Believe it or not, he actually had two really good reasons why he needed that chamber, believe it or not. Do you remember the Pepsi commercial in the 1980s when he had that really, really bad burn on his scalp? It actually works wonderfully for thermal burns. The other reason why he needed it was he had, I want to say, 17 surgeries on his nose, and my understanding was that they actually clipped his nasal artery. So he had no blood flow getting to his nose, and I think my understanding is that actually that chamber regrew enough vasculature in his nose so it didn't fall off his face. So, yeah. So believe it or not, I know that sounds crazy. And of course, he misused it and abused it just like he did propofol and every other drug you can think of. But there was actually two really good reasons, and it actually helped save his look. Because if you can imagine, you know, he kind of looked freaky near the end there, but imagine him without hair and a nose. He would have looked even a little bit more interesting. So, yeah.
He might have looked like one of the people from Thriller. But anyway, go back to the target market a little bit. Charlie, you talked about diabetic patients who have wounds. You also talked about people coming off radiation. And then you mentioned thermal burns, so burn victims, I would imagine, be some. If there's any other situations where people should be thinking about this, feel free to mention that. And then you mentioned the target market. There's, you know, 1% of the people who should be looking into this or could be looking into this are. Just kind of give us an idea of, especially here in the metro Atlanta area, what's the target market that is available, if you have a number?
Well, I'm sorry. Our practice, you know, it's a wound specialty practice. So, you know, basically, going back to my comment earlier that sometimes someone will go have a surgery, or they'll have a C-section, and where they got their stitches doesn't want to heal for whatever reason. Maybe they are a little bit obese, or maybe they're a smoker. Whatever the things that can somewhat impede your normal healing rate can take a few extra days, and that can lead to some infections and then more problems. If the person, you know, has surgery, for example, just a straight surgery, they're not necessarily a diabetic with an ulcer, or they're not necessarily someone who's had radiation. If their wound's not behaving right, they need a wound specialist like Dr. Schwegman, because as he mentioned earlier, only about 15%, you know, or so of our patients end up being hyperbaric medicine candidates. The beauty of our practice is because it's dedicated to this group of patients, whoever you are that has a wound, whatever it is, that's not healing correctly or quickly, because there's very good data out there that talks about, you know, particularly for certain sets, but if your wound doesn't heal in a certain, you know, period of time, then your risks go up. So, you know, having access to a certified wound specialist, which all of our physicians are, they're not just doctors that have gone out and said, okay, I'm willing to, you know, bring somebody in and do wound care, because it can be done poorly, that delays healing or even creates more wounding in and of itself. So getting to a very experienced practice like ours, where our doctors are true certified physicians in wound specialty, as well as being supported by nursing staff that are also specialty trained in wound, anybody that has a wound that's not behaving right, call our practice, because we're not necessarily going to stick you in the chamber, but we're going to have somebody and equipment and materials that will heal you quickly.
So there's a lot of other things. They're not going to just walk you back to the chamber. Here, sit here. I mean, there's other things you guys do, but it's all around getting people from who have issues with wounds back to normal health.
Exactly. And to drill down a little bit more specifically, people that have had radiation damage, what people don't think about is that those are radiation wounds. So, you know, we normally think about wounds on our skin, on the outside of our body. We don't think about wounds on the inside. And that's exactly what radiation does. It's great at killing cancer cells, but it's like a lawnmower, and it's great at killing pretty much everything in its path, including the blood vessels that supply those tissues. And so, you know, to drill it down more specifically, if you're a patient who has had treatment for prostate cancer, for pelvic cancers, for breast cancer, and you have bleeding from your bladder, bleeding from your rectum, if you have a non-healing wound in an area that got radiation in the past, then we're someone who we can actually help fix you. The problem is that with all these specialties that actually deal with these issues, they're treating the symptoms. So Mike, like for you, you know, you've got a cold. And so we're like, yeah, take Sudafed and you know, get some rest. And so we can, you know, tell you what medicines to take, but they're only going to treat the symptoms. They don't treat the underlying virus. And that's the same problem with all of these specialists, that they're treating these diseases from damage due to radiation, things that maybe help subjectively make them feel better. And I'm absolutely all for them because, like for you, Mike, I want you to feel better. But it doesn't treat the underlying problem, which is the fact that the blood vessels that were in the radiated field are gone. And so those tissues can't heal themselves. Our goal is to give you the definitive treatment, which is to restore those blood vessels so that those tissues will actually heal and you can have normal tissues again.
Are you finding that many of your patients, they're coming to you as a last resort? They've, because of the perception, because of the education of other doctors out there, they've tried everything else, and you're kind of the last resort.
Almost inevitably. I mean, if I had a dollar for every time somebody came to me and said, why didn't somebody tell me about this before? Or I've tried 30 different things. I wish I had done this 6 months ago, a year ago. And like all disease processes, the quicker you can get them before symptoms get worse and worse and worse, the easier they are to heal. So we believe time is of the essence.
We saw in one of our centers, we saw a lady who had breast cancer, was a survivor, had gone through chemo and radiation, and had been having some problems around a reconstruction on her breast. It had dehisced, which means the stitches had kind of come open because they, you know, as we've talked about, the system, the skin there in that area couldn't support the surgical wounding. And so went to a practice, was getting wound care done to her. And I would wager, I guess, that the wound care that was being provided as it relates to treating a wound was good wound care. But 3 months into that practice, seeing her, they sent her to us, and we healed her in 3 months. So if you think about that, it took her 6 months. But it would have been 3 months if she'd have been to us immediately. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, exactly.
So, you know, particularly if you're a diabetic with a wound that's not healing, particularly if you're a patient with radiation and you've got either a complaint that's related to that field or a wound that's related to that field, absolutely you want to get to a UHMS-accredited hyperbaric medicine program with certified wound specialists.
And to piggyback on that, you know, patients that have a wound that's not healing, it should be getting smaller every day. And if it's not, there's a reason. And the whole purpose of seeing a wound care specialist is to actually figure out what the reason is and remove that barrier to heal. And that's what we're there for. So common things that cause wounds not to heal, we've already discussed the lack of blood flow, whether it's diabetes, peripheral vascular disease, or radiation. But some other things are infection, very common. And sometimes an infected wound doesn't look like a typical infection. So doctors will say, it doesn't look infected, when actually there's horrific bacteria that are growing out of it, and we just needed to do a culture and figure that out. And sometimes it's as simple as that. Or they have venous insufficiency, so they've got swelling in their legs, which is preventing oxygen delivery to their wound, that we can actually help manage, or peripheral vascular disease that we can get blood vessels to open up. So there's generally a reason or a multitude of reasons why a wound doesn't heal. And if you have a non-healing wound, it's not going to heal itself if we don't figure out what it is that's causing that problem and eliminate it.
Dr. David Schwegman and Charles Hall are our guests from Hyperbaric Physicians of Georgia. Before we get the information as far as how people can reach out to you, your locations and things like that, for someone that's listening, that's interested, but I'm concerned about being in one of these chambers. You know, I know you have big ones that are bigger than this room, but they're also the single-person chambers as well. I don't want to be confined. Tell us a little bit about that, because I know it's really not threatening, because I'm a little claustrophobic myself, but I've seen the pictures and I've talked to Charles off the air about this. They're actually quite relaxing.
Yeah, I'm a little claustrophobic myself. And so we actually have two locations with chambers that are as large as a room. So you could, I'm 6'2", and when I stand, I can't reach the top and nor can I reach the sides. And that's really the purpose, is there aren't very many folks that have what they call multi-place chamber. But it's built just for that, for patients who are claustrophobic or who can't lay on their back. And so if you are claustrophobic, no worries. You know, we have a chamber that is right for you, that you'll feel just fine in. And some folks, even without claustrophobia, you know, we also have good medicines that can make you nice and relaxed.
And yeah, you're talking.
Right, exactly. So, I wouldn't let that be the concern that stops you from getting the care that you need.
And even the single ones, and Charles, you told me about the single ones where you can actually, you're watching television.
Yeah, I've been treated by our practice in the past, and during that time I was able to treat both the multi-place chamber and the solo chamber. I wanted to take advantage of the opportunity that I had to be able to describe it to somebody, and see which I like better too. When you go into the multi-place chamber, it's kind of like either being like if it's in the Lithonia practice, which is like I said, large as this room, it kind of feels like sitting on a MARTA bus or something. It's large. The seats are pretty good size. The other one I would say feels like a commuter jet. Basically, it's a round chamber. But it's you know, as David talked about, he's a tall man with a wingspan, and he can't touch the sides or the top. So, it's either it's like a small room or being on an airplane. You know, like a large commuter jet or something like that. The solo chambers are large acrylic on the side, so that it, I said earlier, it kind of looks like, feels like being in a fishbowl in the sense that you can, there, everywhere you look, you can see out. There, you're not inside it. You know, people think of something like an MRI machine or something like that that's extremely confining and very close to you, and you can't really see out. This is not like that at all. We can accommodate a very large person in the solo chambers, and you go into basically a bed that has a head that raises up to your level of comfort. We can get you all in there in a recliner position with pillows and whatnot. And you got a television right there over the chamber that you can hear and watch and pick whatever you want to watch. So for me, the reclining in a solo chamber where it was just me and what I wanted to watch instead of voting on it with a group of people, I thought the solo chamber was great.
Well, go ahead and give us the locations where people could find out more information as well.
We're located around the metro to try to provide convenience to the patients, because when you're managing these types of wounds, it does require some frequent trips to the physicians. So we're located on the Kennistone Hospital campus in the attached medical office building at Witcher Street. Our St. Joseph practice, it's in the St. Joseph Hospital downstairs on the lower level, though we're not affiliated with St. Joseph. We're a freestanding practice. We're just co-located inside of the hospital building itself. We've got a practice just west of Hillendale Hospital on the same road, side road there, Hillendale Drive, at 5700 Hillendale Drive. That's where our largest, at the time, it was one of the largest multi-place chambers in the Southeast, actually. And then we've got our practice in Cumming in the attached medical office building there at Northside Forsyth in the 1505 building. So several locations that you can go and be seen.
And the website?
The website is kind of a play on the name of our practice, which is Hyperbaric Physicians of Georgia. An abbreviation for hyperbaric medicine or hyperbaric oxygen therapy is HBO. So if you want to go to the website, and I encourage that because it has all of our addresses and phone numbers for each location, as well as descriptions of our providers and our practice, that's www.hboga.com. HBOMDGA.com, sorry. www.hbomdga.com. I had to get corrected there. But if you think about it, Hyperbaric HBO Physicians MD of Georgia. So HBOMDGA.com.
Great. Charles, thanks so much. Charles Hall, Dr. David Schweigman with Hyperbaric Physicians of Georgia. Thanks so much for your time. Very, very interesting information. Great stuff. And hopefully it'll continue to grow because it's good stuff.
Yeah, pleased to be here.
Thank you
for inviting us.
Stephen, thank you.
All right. Joining us now on the program from Eva and Irma's house, it's Jill Kremins. Hello, Jill. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Tell us, Eva and Irma's house. I understand it's senior care, but give us the scoop. What does the company do? What are your services?
Well, thank you for asking. For 25 years, I took care of my builders, realtors, developers, and bank customers at the Community Bank in Loganville. And unfortunately, in 2008, the FDIC closed our bank, and I found myself without a job, without bank community, without friends at work, everything. And so I had a multitude of rental properties that I had acquired over time, and that was my investment and my husband's investment for our retirement. Unfortunately, when the FDIC closed the bank and I lost my job, I had to figure out what to do with some of these homes, because also at the same time, my tenants were struggling. So one day I was at a networking event in 2011, And I met a young lady named Amy Henschel with Senior Provisions. And what she discussed with me was very interesting, is that she helps place seniors and help their children find places for them at the big assisted livings, the different types of nursing homes, personal care homes, which is what my situation is called at Eva and Irma's. And I found that very interesting, but I didn't really do a lot with it. Well, about 30 days later, I woke up in the middle of the night and I realized what I was being called to do with some of these empty rental properties, and that was actually to turn them into senior care homes. So I got up on July 26, Googled personal care homes, and decided to go check some of them out. And what I discovered in the metropolitan area based on what was on the websites was very shocking to me. They were not clean. They were not appearance to me being well taken care of, the seniors. So I was a little famished with that, but I figured, well, this is not Jill. This is not the way she's going to run it. So I took one of my rental properties that was empty, got in touch with my contractors, my guys, and we renovated the house to accommodate. And specifically what I do, if you guys and gals on the radio will envision the Golden Girls, the show. Those ladies were extremely independent. They worked, they drove, they were just roommates. My situation is much different. If you have a mom or a dad who can no longer live alone, then it's a roommate situation, but I have someone there 24/7, 365 days a year to look after your mom or dad. I'm one of the caregivers. So I also hire some girls that assist me. So that's what I do at Eva and Irma's, is I take care of your mom and dad.
Is there anything out there like this, or is this a brand new approach that you've introduced?
It is not a brand new approach that I have introduced, but what I did discover is basically I say to my clients and my friends and when I network that I have no competition, and I've believed that from day one. In my investigation back in August of 2011, I discovered there's really three categories of where moms and dads wind up, and the fourth one is if they can live on their own till the day they go away and go to heaven. The first one is you're either Medicaid, which is basically rendered penniless, impoverished, with no assistance, and very little monthly stipend of income. And those family members who need to have help with their parents, but the parents don't have any resources and the kids don't have any resources. And I also learned you can't just ring a doorbell at the nursing home and say, hey, my mom's 80 and, you know, needs a little help. Can she check in? The answer is no, she can't. So what do I do with mom or dad? Well, if they're rendered penniless, then they have to go to a Medicaid personal care home. The second category is the families who maybe were doctors, lawyers, and Indian chiefs, as I say it, the people who own the Ciscos, the Bill Gates, the surgeons in Atlanta, etc. They would go to what I call the cruise ships, those beautiful assisted livings in Atlanta and the beautiful assisted livings in Gwinnett County, Fulton, etc. But the expenses and the monthly output is anywhere from $5,000 to $15,000, depending on your level of care. My target market is the people that are in between the Medicaid, say $1,700, $1,800 a month in revenues, up to, say, $3,000 to $3,500. And that is the market that I serve.
How do you find your clients? I mean, do you advertise? Do you go to doctors and say, hey, if you know somebody that's kind of in these shoes, how do you find your clients or your roommates or your renters?
That is a very good question. And because I did not know anything different than my 25 years in the mortgage world, calling on realtors, calling on builders, I decided this is medically related. What is my target market? Who do I want for my client? And then I went to those places that I thought would have those clients, and I was right. I went to the rehabs, I went to the rehab clinics, and also the rehab centers, which our age group, I'm 52, we grew up calling nursing homes. But now part of that facility is a nursing home. The other part is rehab. So when someone is injured or falls or maybe is in a car wreck, of any age, they wind up at these rehabs after they exit the hospital. So I contacted the social workers there. Amy Henschel with Senior Provisions has been one of my biggest co partners with me. She places seniors, so she knows all the single personal care homes and senior homes in the area, the metro 20 county area. She also helps place people in, like I said, the full-blown assisted livings or the nursing home side if that's what they've needed. But a lot of it was my own networking and lack of information for me where to find the clients. I just sat down and thought, how would I find a client? And that's where I went networking.
Jill, how at one of your typical houses, how many seniors are living there usually? And go ahead and talk a little bit about all the different locations where your houses are located.
Sure, I'll be glad to. My houses right now are located in Snellville. That was my first one, about a quarter mile from Gwinnett. South Gwinnett High School, my Sandy Springs location, and then I have a recently acquired home in DeKalb County that will house six residents, and then I have one that I'm renovating now on the other side of Loganville, Walnut Grove Community. Each of those houses, with the exception of DeKalb County, will house four individual residents, and then I have a spare bedroom in each home for the caregiver. My caregivers, and when I'm one of the caregivers, I do this too, we stay there 24/7. The seniors are never left alone. We do have, the caregiver does sleep, and that is one of the requirements. Most of my seniors, when they come in, they have a week or so to adjust, but they have to sleep because the caregiver has to sleep. At my price point, I do not have the resources to pay my girls right, provide good food, good entertainment, and a roof over everyone's head and still make a profit, I don't have the resources to pay someone that can stay awake all night. So if the seniors cannot sleep during the night, then there's wonderful medications that are non-addictive, non-narcotic, that can assist them to sleep. And I usually ask the daughters to have the doctors write that prescription, and that gets everybody in the right groove.
Are the caregivers there to just help the seniors when they need the help? Or do the seniors look for them to cook the meals, to provide the entertainment? Are they looking for all that? Or are these seniors more that they want to be independent, but they've got that person there just in case they need them?
Yes. There's different levels of care. And this answer to your question would kind of encompass several different categories. One is the state does not allow, because I am state licensed, we have to all be state licensed now. The state does not allow someone to come into my home or any personal care home that is bedridden. They must be able to walk in and cross the threshold on their own. My perfect client is a happily confused church lady or church gentleman. I do not do Medicaid. I do not do psychiatric clients. I do not do bipolar. So if your mom or dad is happily confused and just needs that type of oversight, then that's what we do. More specifically, and shocking to me when I did my research in August of 11, was the fact that the state only requires a oversight caregiver, not the owner, the caregiver, to have a third grade reading level. I said, is that not to confuse the Tylenol with the Advil? Some of these doctors' medicines I can't even pronounce and understand. So I found that to be shocking. All my girls that work for me either have had at least 20 years experience at a big institution, or they've been doing this their entire lives. Two of my caregivers are 34 and have literally been following their aunts and their grandmothers around doing this type of home care since they were 12 and 13. So my criteria is greater than what the state requires. I like my ladies to have CNA, which is Certified Nursing Assistant, or higher, but the state does not require that. What my ladies and I do when we're over at the house is, yes, we like our seniors to be independent. We give them that reach, but also we're there to hand them, their medicines have to come in what's called a bubble pack. They don't come in the twist-off tops like you have at the house, and safety caps for your kids. So the pharmacist puts all their AM pills in one bubble pack, and we just pop the bubble in front of the client, and then the client will take the pills. They're not like, and the state doesn't allow us at any place, they're not like our two-year-old. We can't hold them down and force their medicines. So unfortunately, if the senior chooses not to take their medicine that day, even if they're not well and they have dementia, We are not allowed to force it on them. So what I do is I will get the caregiver or myself to try again a little bit later. If not, then we simply ring the daughter or son, the family member that's in charge, and tell them today they refuse their meds. And then we continue to try throughout the day. So that's what we do. We also prepare all the meals. All my girls can cook. I can cook. So we have good food. And that is also a difference. A lot of these either Medicaid or homes that choose not to do them the way I do them, and there are some really good ones out there like me. I'm not the only one that's that good, but with the other ones that are not so good, they serve a lot of hot dogs, they serve a lot of pasta, they serve a lot of what I call junk food. And yeah, we have junk Fridays. I bring in, you know, the fun food. But during the week, and we provide a good, heavy, hearty Sunday dinner, these meals are good and health conscious.
Jill, one of the questions we ask a lot of guests on the show, I love asking this question, and I'm really going to enjoy asking you this because I think this is more than just about your business, but also about the industry that you're in. Where do you see yourself and even Irma's House in the next 3 to 5 years? But also, where do you see the industry going? Where do you see senior care going? And what would you like to see that you don't see today?
That is a very good question. I would love to see even Irma's. My husband and I had acquired rental properties, as I shared with you before, over the 10, 20, 25 years I was in the mortgage business. We did it slowly. We did it methodically. We didn't just run out and buy 15 houses in one day. And so when the market turned, I took these five first homes and turned them into senior homes. Unfortunately, I had spent about $15,000 to $18,000 renovating two in Gwinnett County that while I was in the middle of renovating, the Gwinnett County guidelines changed because of the zoning. And the part of that is because the not-so-nice Medicaid psychiatric homes are popping up in everybody's neighborhoods. So where does Jill see even Irma's? Right now, when I finish filling the other Loganville house in Walnut Grove and DeKalb County, right off of North Harrison, close to the CDC, I will be able to, at that point, either acquire more rental properties, buying foreclosures like I've done, or actually become someone else's tenant, talk a landlord into letting me do a little bit of renovation for their home, and then having me as a lifelong client because of my clients. Where is the industry going? There's 52 million baby boomers passing through the system. And my goal is to have 20 to 30 at a time, giving them extra devotion, extra care, and extra love. And just like the previous guest, you guys had all good doctors go to medical school. Well, all good assisted livings and rehabs, they're good. They're good. The girls they hire are good. They're caring. They're loving. They're devoted. But what they are is a one caregiver to 15 client ratio during the day. And a 1 to 25 ratio at night. So the girls that work there and the guys that work there, even if they want to sit down with Mrs. Smith and read her the Sunday paper because she can't see it anymore, they can't. They're not allowed to. There is no time for that because of the efficiency ratio that the corporation demands to make its profit. Doesn't mean they don't love your mama. They just can't spend the time with her. So my girls and my homes with 1-to-4 ratio and 1-to-6 ratio, we actually have time to play with the seniors, to sit with them, to read books to them, the newspaper, to snow days, for example. Before the snow hit and it was hitting hard in East Cobb and blocking down 285, I was hanging out at the senior care home in Sandy Springs that morning before it hit, and just having hot chocolate and bacon cookies. Then I moved my car and my body up to Gwinnett County where I missed the snowstorm and had hot chocolate and cookies again with that group of seniors. Then I went home to my husband's home. And I also had to plan and prepare for hotel. Have you guys ever thought about what are you going to do with a house full of seniors if the power and the ice storm hits and they're cold? Well, I don't have a $10,000 generator. So what I did 2 weeks before the first snowstorm in the middle of January is I started calling and visiting hotels. Everyone has a generator. Guess what they're for? The generator is only for the fire sprinkler system, not the heat. So let me just say, I know the two hotels in Atlanta, and I'm not going to give them away, that have the proper generator to have the heat in the kitchen fully functioning. I had to book rooms at that hotel and cancel them every day as it went past to make sure the power didn't go out. I had a backup plan for my seniors. I don't know what they do at the institutions. I don't know what they do at the Medicaid homes, but I had a plan to keep your mama warm.
You got to love that personal attention, obviously, and the proactive, being proactive as well. Jill Kremins joining us from Eva and Irma's house, and I've got to ask the question, the name of your company, Eva and Irma's house, where did that come from?
That is something I'm very proud of. My grandmother Eva was widowed in 1938 with three small children. And back then in 1938, women could hardly walk across the street without an escort, much less find a job or get a bank loan or do anything like that. So Grandmother Eva had to have the tenacity, the willpower, and she raised three beautiful children. One of them was my father, and she put them, they all went to college. They were all very successful. Her sister was Irma. Irma lived out in Villarica, Georgia, past Six Flags on I-20, and had nine children and her husband, Barney. They were farmers. And again, a very difficult existence, even for that time period of the 30s, 40s, 50s, and 60s. So even though these two women had these awkward situations and very difficult situations, they always had a clean home, they always had good warm bread in the oven, and they always provided care and love for anyone that came and devotion to their family and their church. I got that from my inheritance of watching my father the same, watching my grandmother Eva, Aunt Irma. So it comes down through my bloodline naturally that I want to give this kind of care and love and attention, and so that's what I do. So the home is actually named after Grandmother Eva, my fraternal grandmother, and her sister, Irma.
Well, Jill, that's a great story. We appreciate it. And I wish we had more time to talk and hear more, but we're running out of time. So for those that would like to find out more, and a great alternative, obviously, to nursing homes or assisted living, they want to find out more about Eva and Irma's house, where can they go to get that information?
They can go to my main website, which is www.myhighlands.com. H-I-G-H-L-A-N-D-S house.net, myhighlandshouse.net. On that website, there are two headers to the right. One of them is Eva and Irma's. If you'll click on that, it'll give you a 3-minute video and a tour of the homes, and you can meet me. And of course, they can always call me on my cell. And that number is 678-524-4112.
Great. Jill Kremins with Eva and Irma's House. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
All right. Also, a big thank you to our other guest, Charles Hall and Dr. David Schwegman with Hyperbaric Physicians of Georgia. A quick reminder that Gwinnett Business Radio can be heard throughout the day on the Gwinnett Business Radio X station, and that you can listen to any of our programs 24/7 by logging on to GwinnettBusinessRadio.BusinessRadioX.com. For Steve and Julian.
Mike, today I learned I can catch up on my stories in a hyperbaric chamber at HBOMDGA.com while enjoying some warm bread from Eva and Irma's house.
Sounds like a very plentiful day for you.
Let's go.
Yep. I'm Mike Salmon. We'll see you next time right here on Gwinnett Business Radio.